Hello.
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 Yo, yo, yo.
Hi.
Hello.
Hello.
Jerome.
Now, at this point of the show, we would normally do a In the Week Where, where we make fun of some of the top news stories in the week. However, this week, we really didn't feel like that was the right thing to do. So,
no.
This week, we will not be discussing the news.
Indeed, we won't. But we will be bringing you, I'll try and speak properly, The Geekly Chronicles.
Indeed.
Episode three of the current series.
Episode three of series three. Can you believe it?
I really can't.
No, me either.
I can.
You can.
Yep.
Does it feel like it's been three episodes? Well, we've got a really packed show for you tonight. We're going to be talking quite a lot about games.
Yes, we are.
And not just them Vidya games either.
Mm.
Games in their entirety. We've got a couple of really great interviews tonight. One is live, one's from space.
Yeah.
And we're going to be talking about them in general, talking amongst ourselves about games. But also, not just games. What else have we got?
We've got giant crumpets.
We have got giant crumpets. This is a new thing. Crumpets are a very British thing anyway. But now Warburton's released giant crumpets, and we're going to be testing them, trying them for the first time.
Yeah.
Indeed.
What else?
Well, we'll have our usual favourites. We'll have the Tumble Fumble.
We will.
Ooh. We'll have the Game of Geeks.
We will.
And we will have our Would You Rather audience vote.
Yes, so we'll be talking about that very soon.
And
that's quite a fun one.
Indeed. And having pretty much just finished assembling the IKEA furniture, we will be adding to our prize draw.
Our prize draw for a prize draw full
yes.
of prizes. It's a draw full of prizes. The prize draw.
Yes.
That we were doing a draw for.
Yes.
Prize
and
draw.
You
for,
can
draw for
win
prize draw.
The prize draw.
And
yes.
the draw.
Prizes.
The draw
and the draw.
And the prizes. Yes.
Yes. And
in
we'll
our 10th
be,
show.
Yeah. We'll be adding to the prize draw a bit later on and telling you how you can enter to win it. But I can exclusively reveal we will be including the manual for the IKEA prize draw.
Let's sign
rather
it.
Rather the draw. We'll sign the
we'll
manual.
We'll sign the manual.
I will get a Sharpie. We will sign the manual.
Yep.
And include that in the draw, mainly because I have nowhere else to put it.
That is very true.
So you could win an attractive IKEA draw.
Full of prizes.
It's not just a random draw either. It's like a really cute little unit.
Yeah, it is actually a chest of drawers. It is a draw
it's
unit.
It's a full unit thing.
Yeah, with what's it got, like three drawers in it?
Yeah,
two?
There's three drawers.
Amazing.
It's got
I think
wheels.
It would look really fine in any office or
dorm room.
Yep.
Anywhere you need to store stuff vertically.
Yeah, amazing. Brilliant. So all that coming up on the show tonight. But first of all, here is the first song of the evening. So this week we have some great prizes to add, and we'll talk about those later. But we have to think now for the rest of the series. We need to get someone to add a cuddly toy to our prize draw.
Indeed.
Maybe we should interview someone from Build-A-Bear Workshop or something.
Well, going back to that wonderful song we just heard from Casey and the Sunshine Band,
yes.
back from all the way back in, was it 1983?
1983 that song came out, although enjoyed some recent fame because it was ironically used in Kingsman. It was the happy song playing while everyone was getting killed.
Yep, lovely.
Yep.
So,
great.
Yeah, so there was a reason to play that song. Because I think this started off as a very UK phenomenon, but has kind of spread throughout the world afterwards. And that's compilation albums called Now That's What I Call Music. So the very first one in 1983 had that song on it. So that's why we picked that today. And that's mainly because today the 92nd Now That's What I Call Music album came out
in
the UK.
I feel old.
I know, yeah. When I was growing up, you know, sort of early teens, would buy these albums, and you know, they're very of the moment, obviously, as the name implies, now.
Yeah.
And so it now 92 came out today, and I've got here cassette tapes of now 29, 31 and 32 that I bought when I was
that's amazing
when I was much younger.
Have we put some pictures up of that on Twitter or something?
But we will do momentarily. I've taken some, so I'll get on to that. Yeah, so these have brilliant 90s classics on there that we've been reminiscing about all day.
Yeah, and I mean, I was looking it up on the internet. I mean, if I can fish out my Wikipedia page, because it started out in the UK in 1983, as you said, and it has spread to other parts of the world. So out in the US, they started in 1998. They started releasing now, and they started from zero again there, or from one. And are currently on, now that's what I call Music 56, out in the US. And it's also been in other parts of the world as well. So over in the Philippines, Indonesia, Malaysia, Taiwan, Hong Kong, Thailand, etc., as the Wikipedia article says, they're up to now 10. Australia has had various versions, and I think they stopped for a while, and now they do. Now that's what I call summer, and now that's what I call winter. So they do two of those a year. In Israel, apparently, they're up to now 20. So it's a phenomenon that has spread all over the world. But I remember as a kid listening to all of these. Now that's what I call music. I used to buy the tapes. And then when I got a CD player, I bought the CDs. And they were absolutely brilliant. And we were looking through at some of the back versions of Now earlier to see, you know, what some of them were like. I mean, some of the Nows that were around the times that we were born and things like that were quite brilliant. But also, I remember, I mean, so what's the one that you've got there?
I've got 29, 31 and 32. So I think we were mainly picking songs off 31, which I have to say is just an absolutely phenomenal compilation album.
So now 31. So now 31 came out on the 31st of July, 1995. Can you believe that?
So that was just the summer before I started at secondary school. So, wow.
Yeah, wow.
So I would have been 11.
So, 95. It was released on vinyl, audio cassette, and compact disc.
Ooh,
wow.
Compact disc. And newfangled.
Three songs reached number one in the UK from that. Some might say by Oasis, Boom, Boom, Boom. Do you remember that one?
I do. Everybody say Way-O.
Way-O. And then Dreamer, which was by...
I'm a dreamer.
Yeah, that's the one. That's how it goes. It was by Livin' Joy. Livin' Joy. Yeah, that's right.
But there were this is like a rubbish version of the intros round off Buzzcocks.
Yep.
Basically.
Yeah.
But yeah, but there were loads and loads of really awful but brilliantly cheesy songs on this one. So I'd love to hear from you all as well. What was your first Now? What was or more than that, what was the first song that you remember actually buying? So, I mean, in the chat room, we've got Lassie Nessie, who has said that they buy Now albums all the time, which is
constantly
great.
Constantly buying Now albums.
Them. Every day. Every day I buy a Now album. It's the same one for 6 months of the year, but hey. But what is this first song that you remember buying? I mean, was your first music purchase a Now album?
No, I think it was a single that I bought in Asda for 75p.
Wow.
It was Independent Love Song by Scarlett. Oh,
I love that song.
Is that right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Independent Love Song, definitely. Yeah. 75p.
Yeah, what about you?
So it was kind of a family tradition for me that on birthdays, someone would get the next Now album.
Right.
That was the nearest to their birthday. So as a family, we would just amass this huge collection of CDs. And then iTunes sort of happened, and we just stopped.
That's the point in which I stopped buying CDs. I was at university. Excuse me. I was at university the first time I bought a song on iTunes, and that was it. I didn't go back to buying CDs after that.
We were running out of places to put them. We kept losing them, because obviously once you get the CD, and I'm not condoning copyright infringement, but you've got to copy it onto everyone's computer so they can put it on their MP3 player.
Well, yeah, I mean,
like,
I didn't
swap
at first.
It around the family.
But I remember the first MP3 I ever had, though. I mean, the first song I ever bought was "Tell Me When" by the Human League, and I got it on tape. But the first MP3 I ever had was "Dancing in the Moonlight" by Top Loader, and it wasn't the best quality MP3, and it wasn't the best quality speakers on my computer, so it sounded rubbish. And I thought to myself, "Well, this is all right, but it's never going to replace CDs, is it?" Wow.
Samothy says, Samothy's first album was Katie Tunstall's Eye to the Telescope, which to this day is still a brilliant album.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. Great album. Mm. But I think, you know, now 31 was indeed a classic for
Although
us.
Although we did pick a particularly cheesy tune from disc one or cassette one, side two of Now 29, which made us reminisce quite
we did.
Strongly.
Oh,
now,
God,
now,
yes.
just before we play that, let's see if I can. I'm going to try and do the intro to a couple of these and see if you can guess them. See if either of you can guess them.
It is going to be like a rubbish version of the intro.
Oh, this is an awful version of the intro.
Wow.
Okay, so I'm just looking through the track list here. So this is Now 31. So this is all stuff that was... I mean, Now 31 was released in 1995. So this is all stuff of the era.
And I have a massive advantage over Chris.
Yes.
Okay, let me see if
given I was alive for three-tenths or 30% of the 1990s.
Yes, well, hey... Let's not reveal our ages. I'll feel older. But yeah, so
I know it, but I can't remember the name of the song.
She came from Greece. She had a thirst for knowledge.
She studied sculpture at St. Martin's College.
That's where I caught her eye, which is.
Pulp's Common People.
Pulp's Common People.
Although the version by William Shatner is better. Much more hilarious. Yes.
Let's try another one. You've got a track listing in front of you.
Oh, look, I was right, but I didn't want to cheat.
We're now both looking at the back of this tape to figure this out.
Get that. No. Dun, 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 dun,
dun. This one isn't even seeming familiar.
Supergrass, no. All right. We Whoosh. Are young, we are free, we've got teeth.
Nice and clean. Nice and clean.
Yes. No, that begins like that, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. Okay, this
one
will be...
like very fast, sort of foreboding spy movie music.
Little bit, okay, this one will be easy. This one will be easy.
Oh, no. That means it'll be really hard. And I can
I thought love was only true in fairy tales.
Made for someone else, but not for me.
Yes!
Woo!
It was the re-release of I'm a Believer.
Is it like Vic and Bob or something?
Vic Reeves and Bob Mortimer.
Oh, dear.
Oh, my God.
Okay, but now this is the song that we're going to play now.
We're going to inflict on you all.
Let's see if... so how does the intro to this one go? It's kind of... That's kind of the intro, isn't it? It was people took it seriously, but mind you, people back then thought Billy Ray Cyrus was good.
Yeah.
And all Billy Ray Cyrus did was spawn Miley Cyrus.
Yes. I like the way you say spawn.
Well, she can't exactly have been born. It was more of a spawning, surely, yes. For Miley Cyrus.
The way that Hollywood-esque celebrities are kind of replicated.
You're actually a closet Cyrus fan, aren't you?
No, it just seems like we're just perpetuating hate rather than, you know, just
spreading
saying,
love.
Oh, this isn't for me.
Okay. Miley, I actually quite like Miley Cyrus.
Yeah, I got nothing again.
No, there we go then. So, on that...
I'd just like to put on the record that I'm very not a fan, because otherwise it's going to look like we all like her.
Okay, fine.
Anyway.
Good stuff. I'll be sure not to tell my achy, breaky heart that.
Mm-hmm.
The prize draw.
The masterfully crafted draws. IKEA yes. prize draws.
So what is currently in our prize draw?
Well, currently in our prize draw, rather excitingly, we have got the script for the jingles signed by Hattie Hayridge.
Yep.
Do you want to twiddle a few buttons?
Also known as Holly from Red Dwarf.
Yeah, absolutely.
Featuring such hits as...
Continent Yellow Alert.
And...
Yellow Snow Alert.
There's a lot of yellow.
Yellow Snow Alert.
Yeah, and also...
It looks like you're listening to a podcast. Would you like some help with that?
So that the script for all of those signed by Hattie Hayridge, Holly from Red Dwarf, is in our prize draw, as is a signed copy of About the Walls, the new album by Irene and the Disappointments, who were the guests from the first episode of this series.
Yep.
We have got a portable battery chargery thing.
Mm-hmm.
So you can charge your devices while you're away from power.
We do.
Which is exciting. And we have the prize donated to us by Jess from last
episode. Show. Yes, the last show.
which is a tile thing, which you can pair with your phone, and then when you lose something, you press a button and it shows you where
it is.
And
very
makes
cool.
It like make noises and stuff. Mm-hmm. It's rather exciting. I want one for me.
This week we've got two things to add to the prize draw.
Yeah, well, one of them, we've got lots of things, because one of them is the IKEA manual, obviously.
Yes, we do have the IKEA manual running this week. But this week's kind of game theme has led to two prizes being in the prize draw. So we have, from the fantastic Rise Gaming that we are interviewing later, a wristband, which is pretty cool. But also, this noise that might seem familiar. The noise is not the prize, but the thing that makes the noise is the prize. Here it goes. Hopefully, any minute. Did you hear that?
I heard it. Hopefully our listeners heard it.
There we go.
That's a very familiar noise.
It's a very familiar noise. So adding to the prize draw tonight is a circa 1989 original model Game Boy, complete with some games.
Exciting time.
So that is being added to our prize draw this week. So in the last episode of the series, which, Catherine, what's special about it?
It is live in front of a studio audience.
Yeah, so not just live like we're live now, sat in
live,
the studio.
Live.
It's like live in person.
Like in a theatre where
different
everyone
kind
can come
of live.
And watch. Mm-hmm. Yes.
You can,
that's why they
you
call
can
it
buy
live
a ticket
chess.
For a teeny tiny amount of money.
Yes.
A donation, really. And then you can actually see us. Our faces.
If you want to buy
our
a ticket.
Entire persons.
If you want to buy a ticket for a slightly larger amount of money, you get all kinds of geekly stuff.
That's true.
As well mm-hmm. as the ticket.
So yeah, if you head to gkly.co and click the big live thing, the thing that says live on the right hand side, that will...
It's pretty big.
Yeah, it is. And it glows.
Yes.
It will take you off to get tickets to the live show. So we will be live on stage on
in
the 26th
London.
Of February in London. So please, if you are in the UK, travel to London. If you're outside of the UK, travel to London. If you're in space, travel to London. But games.
But how can we win the prizes?
That is a good question.
How do we
question.
Enter the competition?
And if you want to win the prize, head to gkly.co/prizes. And I'm going to wait for it to make the noise.
Yeah, yeah. It takes a while.
And pop in a name or a username or a handle, whatever you want us to call you, and your email address so we can let you know if you win. So gkly.co/prizes.
Yep, and we will ship you the drawers with the prizes in. So it is a drawer full of prizes.
Or just give them to you if you also come to the live show, because I'm going to be honest.
And you don't mind going
home with the chest. We are slightly amused by the idea of someone carrying this home on the tube.
That would be funny.
It does have little wheels on it.
It does. It does. We have thought about your convenience from start to finish and not just bought the cheapest thing in IKEA.
You will have to mind the gap then.
You are listening to the Geekly Chronicles. It's like a traffic jam when you're already late, but with a better sense of irony.
So we're also talking about games this week. So we've got lots of cool guests and exciting things coming up on the show. But we were talking quite a lot about games earlier. And actually, a game isn't necessarily just sitting down at a Game Boy or in front of a PlayStation or something like that. We were talking about any kind of games and how play is something that we all do, from playing that famous game, The Floor is Lava. Actually, I was watching back through old Adventure Time episodes earlier this week. There's a great one where Jake and Finn are caught in a storm, so they're in the treehouse, and Jake's just using his imagination, but then his imagination becomes real, and the floor is actually lava, and, things happen. And we're joined now by Talon Lee, and this is, unfortunately, we have to admit here, a pre-recorded segment, but we were on the bridge of the USS Enterprise at the time, as you can probably hear. So
I feel like that's forgivable.
Yeah, we had to pre-record this bit of the interview, largely because the person we're interviewing is in a different time zone, and also because we were in space.
Yeah.
So hello,
Talon. Make interviews slightly awkward. Hi, Talon.
What's that thing on that guy's face?
Oh, no, never mind that.
We call it the pasty.
Okay, well, hi there.
Hi, and...
Is that racist to Klingons?
I don't know. A pasty head.
No, the golden thing.
Yeah, probably.
Klingons and space stuff aside, we've been talking about games on the show tonight, and you present a podcast.
I do, just in general. It's about pottery.
I was referring to the games one.
Not the podcast.
Oh, okay, yeah, the gaming podcast, the one that actually gets released and shared with people, as opposed to the short recordings about how much I like pots that just sit on my hard drive forever unheard. Anyway, yeah, I host the Downloadable Concept podcast along with my wife, Fox Lee, three munchlaxes in a human suit, and cousin Jeb from Canada, who is a games journalist for, I'm going to get this wrong, indiegames.com, I believe. If that's not an allowed endorsement, feel free to clip that out.
No, we'll leave it in. It's fine.
All right, cool. Yeah, the Downloadable Concept podcast is... as with so many podcasts that wind up happening on the internet, the result of two or more very mouthy people saying, you know, we have such great conversations, we should record that.
Sounds familiar.
Then 1 week later, after I had to do the editing, I realized that we had kind of done something very foolish and committed ourselves to it. But in the process, we've become
Sounds
better
familiar.
At it, I hope.
Yeah, well, I mean, I've been listening to the podcast for a little while, and it is very entertaining, least of all because hearing your friends do a lot of swearing is always quite fun. But yes, I mean, it's
be careful.
Yeah, the thing that I do like about it though is that it's just a very positive look at, you know, here's some of the stuff we've been playing, and here's what we've been up to, and you know, I like that. It kind of adds that human face onto the world of games.
We have one major recurring segment we do regularly, which is the retro gaming news, which started out as just space filler, but wound up becoming kind of as a concept, kind of like a central point for the whole point of the podcast, because games journalism, as it's presented these days, as people experience it, is very much this giant now machine. It's effectively a wing of advertising. There's about a space of 3 days or 4 days when a game has come out where you can basically say stuff about it and people will care enough to listen. But what we do with the retro gaming news is we grab this time N years ago and we look at just what games had come out, and that lets us put the contrast between the initial buzz and the news that people were like, oh my god, this game's come out, it's the best thing ever, and what we now know about it. It's a way to rediscover some lost gems. It lets us put some games in like immediate contrast of like, hang on, these two games came out at exactly the same time. That's really weird. Why did one last? Why did one not last? And that suits very well to Jeb and I are very much long-term gamers. We're very much historical kind of people, just because we're older than the typical voice of gamer position that the culture goes for. Games are cool and games are fun and games are for everyone. And the idea that you have to be kind of an angry nerd to be part of that culture is really damaging, and we want to try and push back against that.
I think it's really great that that there's a kind of focus on that gaming being for everyone. I mean, I was probably more of a hardcore gamer when I was younger. Now I think I just don't have the time to invest in a lot of games. So the games I play are ones I can dip in and out of. And I mean, you know, just looking at my co-hosts here, neither of you would call yourselves gamers, but I'm sure you have played games on a device of some kind. I mean, are there games that you've played recently on your phone or anything, Catherine?
No, actually, recently I've played less games than ever. I think the last thing I played on my phone was Jetpack Joyride, which was
excellent.
A couple
that
of years
really
ago.
Fun.
That was a really fun game. Yeah.
Well, I just finished a semester at university where, thanks to latching onto a teacher who's very good with these topics, I've been doing a lot of academic level reading and conversing about games. So there's a part of me that wants to leap into the conversation and go, oh, you haven't been playing games, but everybody plays games, and you know, exploring the branching meanings of game and play space and quoting academics like Huygens and stuff like that, which is really, to me, interesting, but you've only got a limited amount of time, and I'm pretty sure they're going to bean you out of there at any point.
I can see Spock's finger on the button. but that's a good point though, because we have played tabletop games in the last year.
Yep.
And I love tabletop games, and the three of us have played them together many times. I play them at the pub a couple of nights a week. It's just something that you do with people, right?
Yeah, you don't even do them with people, you do them with yourself as well. This is an experience that isn't necessarily universal, but it's close enough to universal that I have a sort of a pet theory about it. Have you ever been walking on a tile floor and notice my footsteps pass this many tiles? So if I position my foot this way, I can make my footsteps the same.
Yeah, I do that quite a lot.
Yeah.
Or I want to make sure I only hit a brown tile and a white tile and a brown tile and a white tile.
I do that all the time. Especially when I, like, if I'm on the tube and I'm walking like a long distance between the Waterloo and City line and the Northern line at Bank, I'm always amusing myself by trying to get on the right coloured tiles and things.
Yeah. That is an example of a game. That's a game you made, and it's a game that is only for you. That's a really common human experience. In the context of an academic level discussion, games are basically machines to create play. And play is sort of this special little segregated bubble where there's stuff inside the play that you only care about because you're engaged in the play. Like, speaking in a broad, holistic sense, no one actually has a reason to be invested in whether or not Mario rescues Peach. That's a story the game tells you, but there's no inherent intrinsic value to Mario rescues Peach. Basically, you sit down to the game and tell the game, all right, I'm going to care about what you tell me to care about for a while, and that caring, that emotional state, is going to be part of why I enjoy this experience.
The play is the thing.
The play is the thing. Oh, I like that.
Well, yeah, that interestingly is a line that we use quite a lot when we're discussing play like this, where because this experience is universal, we also get into these really contentious arguments outside of the academic space of what is a game? Is this a game? Does this count as a game? And that usually reflects someone who doesn't really get the entire conversation about, you know, defining things like this. So if you are at all a participant in the game known as The Game, I'm sorry, I've just ruined it
for
you.
I've just lost it. Mm-hmm. Thanks.
Yeah, right. I don't actually partake. I retired from semi-professional play of The Game. For those of you who aren't aware, The Game is a game where the whole purpose of it is you're not playing, you don't think about the game. And if at any point you do think about the game, you have to announce that you just lost the game, which has the side effect of anyone else around you experiencing the game. Yeah, sorry. Anyone else around you experiencing that same moment of thinking, oh, I thought about the game, I lost the game. Now, when people complain about this video game isn't really a game, and this video game isn't really a game, or this, Snakes and Ladders isn't really a game because it just plays itself. The game is a game, which is explicitly about not engaging with it. But it's definitely a game. So our ideas of what constitute a game are big enough and broad enough to enclose the game, and somehow they throw out things like Proteus and Gone Home, or indeed mobile phone games.
So what you're really saying is that a game is a game as long as you play.
Pretty much. And I know that sounds really tautological, but if you
gaming
said that
is in
front
the eye of
an audience, they'd be like,
player.
Ooh.
Yes, gaming is in the eye of the player. I like that as well.
So yeah, player's gonna play.
I'd almost argue it's game is in the hand of the player, just because there needs to because implying some degree of interface rather than observation. But at that point, I'm getting kind of boring.
Well, I mean, it's a really interesting topic of discussion, and I think one that we all recognise can be a bit contentious sometimes with some of the games journalism out there. But with that in mind, then, you're thinking about every single type of game, all of the different types of game, from jumping on tiles to sitting down at a PC and playing a game. Which game would you say you have played the most in your life?
I think that if you got down to the bedrock of it, the single game I've played the most my entire life is a game you'd probably know as Let's Pretend.
Doesn't ring any bells, no. But I could pretend that I know what it is.
Well, let's pretend we're on the Starship Enterprise.
But we are on the Starship Enterprise, Tyler. We don't have
well,
to pretend.
Yeah, good point. You're better at this than I am. But, let's pretend, make believe that you know, I'm a superhero, and that person over that tree over there is a galleon, and I'm going to go fly over there. That game. Effectively,
I'm amazed that there's a tree on the Starship Enterprise, but yes, we'll go with this. It's a pot plant.
Chico has been expanding the gardens.
Yes.
Clearly, some people have more engagement with office flair than others.
Yes.
Anyway.
But we've got one one last question for you, Talon. We've already revealed on the show tonight that we are adding to our prize draw, and our prize draw is a draw full of prizes, an original first edition Game Boy. We're going to be giving away prize draw of prizes at, in our live show at the end of the series. But we need to add a game to it. Do you have any particular favourites from the original Game Boy era that you think we should add?
I was dating this girl who I really liked, and her name was Fox. And she didn't have a Game Boy or any portable systems. And I had had a job, I had some money, and I saw her at a pawn store. Oh, that's with a W. I don't know if they have those in Britain.
Yeah,
they do.
Of both varieties.
I saw in a pawn shop an original, I think it was the Game Boy Pocket. It was green, it was a color she liked, and there was Pokemon Yellow along with it. And I scraped together the last of my money and I bought them, and then I walked two extra bus stops along because to afford this Game Boy and the Pokemon cartridge, I had to use up most of my change for bus fare. To catch a bus to her place to give her Pokemon Yellow.
That's a touching story. And that is one of the games that we're giving away with this Game Boy, so good choice. So hopefully Fox will be happy.
I hope so too. Just in general, I mean, you know, I've been married to her for 11 years. That helps.
Yeah. On both the marriage front and on coming in for an interview, thank you very much, Talon, for your time this evening.
Can I chip in one last thing before I go?
Of course you can.
These past couple of months for me have been spent focusing on making games. Now, I believe that everyone makes games already in their head. And I think that everyone has the capacity to make games. Games are humanizing, and games are a way, in a very pure way, to share both love and ourselves. So please, if you think you can make a game, if you've got an idea, give it a try.
What a great message to end on. Thank you very much, Talon, and Scotty.
Thank you for joining us.
Scotty, beam us up. Catherine and Chris are currently in the kitchen making said crumpets. So I'm stalling for a little bit until they get back in here, but in case you didn't know the story behind these giant crumpets, they would have completely passed me by had it not been for the advertising. Now Warburtons, who are making these giant crumpets, they've just done a series of really brilliant adverts, and I'm ashamed to say that their advertising has completely worked on me. Normally I'm one of these people that says, oh, advertising doesn't work on me, but legitimately, this advertising has worked very, very well. And in their last advert, they had Sylvester Stallone, and it was very amusing. But in this advert, they kind of touched on a real childhood nerve for me and introduced the Muppets to the advertising. And they redid the Muppet theme tune for these giant crumpets. And, well, I love crumpets anyway. Crumpets are great. Great food. Very good if you're British. So hello to all of our listeners. If you're listening from a country that doesn't have crumpets, a brief explanation as to what a crumpet is. It's like a... maybe more of a... sort of a... What is a crumpet? Anyway, I don't actually know. And at this point, my co-host would probably be helping me here. But they're busy making the crumpets in the kitchen. I suppose it's kind of spongy. Kind of bready, but also kind of spongy. It's got holes in it, but also kind of solid and dense. And it's a bit of it's like dark matter, basically. Nobody really knows what goes into it, but it tastes...
Wow.
Wow.
So, yeah, I mean, technology issues aside there, whereby I was pressing a button and it wasn't doing anything. I also, Chris, had no co-hosts here to help me. It was the Kez show.
Uh-huh.
With me, flapping my arms around as birds do, as kestrels do.
Uh-huh. We were slightly worried in the kitchen by the idea of leaving you in here to host on your own.
I have all of the buttons in front of me. I could have done anything at all.
Yes, it is a real risk. I mean, I know we say we don't trust Catherine with buttons, but...
Magnolia alert!
Leaving you alone with buttons is equally dangerous.
Magnolia alert!
Yep.
Exactly. So the crumpets are crumpeting.
Lovely. As we speak.
Well, that was a really fantastic interview with Talon there. Thank you so much, Talon, for coming on the show this evening.
Thank you very much.
And yes, as Caitlin pointed out, there were Manchester references in that advert, that hitting the Arndale and everything. I think it's really nice that they've done such a cool job of being very local about it, even though the Muppets are obviously not British. How would you describe a crumpet, though, Chris?
I would describe a crumpet as a circle of kind of fluffy, bready stuff with holes in it.
But is it bready stuff? Because it's kind of more rubbery than bready stuff.
Yeah. I think this may be delving into levels of crumpet science beyond my capability. Catherine has just brought
Catherine
us the crumpets.
Catherine's instructing as she's bringing the crumpets in from the kitchen.
Yes.
So, yes. Oh, they smell amazing.
They certainly smell like crumpets.
They do smell like crumpets, actually. They do smell like crumpets. This is brilliant.
Yes.
Crumpets are being deposited on our desk as we speak.
Now, I've never been a huge crumpet consumer, it has to be said.
You're not a crumpeteer.
I'm not the most seasoned of crumpeteers. In fact, I'm a very unseasoned crumpeteer.
Unseasoned crumpeteer.
Sounds like the most disappointing breakfast ever. But so this will be not... excuse me. Just had a momentary coughing fit.
It's all the more brought to attention by the fact that you mentioned the coughing fit.
Yes, indeed. And in fact, if I continue talking about it now, it's just going to highlight my mistake. So how about we move on?
Okay.
So this is going to be not only the first giant crumpet experience I've ever had, but one of very few actual crumpet experiences I have had in total.
Amazing.
So
we're just waiting for Catherine to come back
in. Inspect the crumpet.
With the final crumpets.
Yes.
It's the final crumpets.
This is the reason I came back in the room, so that this kind of thing wouldn't happen.
What, me singing about crumpets?
Yeah.
I mean, so it is quite huge. It's not quite as...
It's not...
...uniformly round as regular crumpets
no,
are, either.
No, it may be a crumpet volume
thing. I think
thing.
They sort of... You know, when they're cooking, they kind of relax into more of an oval shape.
And but it's because normal crumpets don't really do that, but I guess because these are so much more giant... It's the world's most giant crumpet. So, are we going to try these crumpets then?
Yeah, I brought them in so that you could, you know, start sampling them.
No, we were waiting for you.
Oh.
We can't have
light
them before
at the expense
you...
of the show.
Yeah, of course.
You'll have crumpet sweat all over your plates. Or just lots of melted butter.
What's wrong with crumpet sweat is what I want to know. Right, okay, so go ahead. You two, try these crumpets. Oh, we heard that. That's good. How are they?
God, that is...
So you're coughing
a lot.
That's
a lot of Marmite.
Right. Tonight is the night that you cough lots.
Yeah.
Yeah, sorry. I rather was trying to be quick on the Marmite.
I see.
So there might be some areas that are very Marmite-y and others that are maybe...
So I don't have Marmite in mind. So let's give this a go. So, Catherine, please not start describing your crumpet.
Well, I've long since held that Warburtons make the best crumpet anyway. Because, you know, they do. So these ones, well, you know, it's all sort of squidgy and crumpety and...
I mean, they've managed to make it twice the size and keep the consistency, which is great.
Yeah. Mine's a bit sweaty, but that may be because of the length of time for which
waiting.
It was sweating on the plate instead of...
Or it might be because I
being in my face.
Spread on it.
Possibly. So, you know.
Oh, this is sensational. So, giant crumpets then. Out of 10, what do we say? I mean,
well,
last series
exactly
we had a.
What I was expecting.
I mean, last series we had a sandwich related show.
I mean, normally I don't like my crumpets too wibbly. I like them quite well done.
Yeah.
But the giant crumpets, you seem to be able to get them well done. But you know, but they don't end up like little bricks.
Mm. Well, that's quite good.
It's got
still
a kind
quite,
of mix of well doneness
it's...
and wibbliness.
So actually, do you think
so
at this
almost,
size they're
it's
better?
Almost better, yeah.
Yeah. So you
and
say
plus,
giant
one
crumpets
crumpet
for the win.
Is sort of like having two small crumpets.
Mm.
I feel as satisfied by one giant crumpet.
Right. Giant crumpets for the win.
I think so.
Okay, well, on that note, we do have another interview coming up in just a few minutes, and we're going to be talking to someone who has turned a college into a game studio. Mm. Okay, well...
Enjoy that.
So, sticking with the games theme of the evening then, we had a really fantastic interview with Talon just before, talking about how everyone... can make games, or rather ending his interview with the idea that everyone should be able to make games. And we now have assuming all of our technology working. Apparently. Someone who is not just making games, but encouraging other people to make games. So assuming this works, I pull our fader up, we should be able to talk to... Hello, are you there?
Hi there, how you doing?
Fantastic. Hi.
Yay.
So please introduce yourself to the world.
My name's Michael, and I'm from Cambridge Regional College, and I run a company called Rising Games.
And so, I mean, this was something that struck me as pretty amazing when I met you. You have basically turned a college into a game studio.
Yes, basically, that's what I've done, yeah. It's, it was just a crazy idea, but yes, it's kind of worked.
So we were just chatting to someone before, I don't know if you heard the interview, someone who was does a podcast, does a bit of games journalism, and said that games create love and understanding, and if you can make a game, if you've ever thought about making a game, you should give it a go. Is that kind of how you view the world of games?
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I think it's one of the most amazing creative outlets that you could possibly get involved with. I mean, my background, training-wise, was coming from music and being a professional musician and writing my own music and getting to record and tour all over the world, which was amazing. But gaming's just got that magical, amazing extra to it that's just fantastic. I mean, you know, you've got all the visualization of the games and the, you know, obviously the creativity and the insight of designing those magical worlds, or just the altered reality of what we do live in. And then, you know, obviously, yes, we've got the sound, which should never be forgotten as well, because obviously it's part of the three important parts of a game. And then there is that, how do we get the mechanics working, and the psychology that goes into gaming is just, it's a whole package that, you know, you just really need to get into and explore everything about it.
So what would you say if someone said, all right, I love the idea, I've got loads of ideas in my head, but making games is really hard. How would I even go about it? I don't think I'm good enough to make games.
Yeah, everyone can. I mean, there's so many, even if someone feels that there's only one area they can get involved in, like if they feel like, you know, I'm only really good at doing the art side of it, it's not hard to learn how to code and program a game anymore. It's not that hard at all. Programs nowadays for coding are very, very much component-based, i.e. you don't have to really know the in-depth of programming, although I fully encourage you do, because that's when the creativity comes about of designing something completely new that doesn't exist, hopefully. And obviously, you know, vice versa, if you're really good on the other side of things, you know, really get involved on that. You've just got to keep going and keep going. And it's getting easier and easier to build games now and just have that sort of port of releasing all that creativity and those dreams that you've always sort of like wanted to bring to life.
And that's, I think that's the thing, right? It's games are so often now about bringing dreams to life. And in many ways, games are like films, interactive films that people can play, certainly in terms of the blockbusters. But as Talon was just saying in the interview we had previously, a game is anything that you get enjoyment out of and play out of. So what... And in your opinion, when you think about all the different platforms and things like that, what do you think is the platform that you kind of get the most joy out of playing on at the moment?
That's a really hard one, because everything has its perks, and obviously everything has, you know, different angles of what it can and can't do. I mean, although that bridge is really, that gap's really getting a lot smaller nowadays with technology. I mean, you know, I don't know, it's hard to say. I love Android for the accessibility and the ease of everyone getting involved. And to be able to release a game on Android is just so easy, and the cost implications of that. And then, you know, obviously, for me, I mean, I love the excitement of what's going to be happening in the future now with the console development and AR. And then, obviously, over the last few days this week, doing the Q&A talks at Apps World with John from the BBC and Anil from Endemol, we were talking about these lovely, fantastic things that are coming out for AR as well. You know, so it's augmented reality is going to be absolutely amazing. I think it's going to be a really exciting time, and the way platforms are just going to progress on and on and on. You know, we're just not going to stop. It's going to be amazing stuff coming forward.
Yeah, I mean, I think when I was younger, I used to play games a lot on console and on PC. Whereas now, actually, I find a lot of the time it's just little things I can play on the go. Catherine, you were saying earlier that you like playing Jetpack Joyride.
Yep.
And that's quite an addictive little game.
It's very easy to just sort of pick up, have a game, and then put it down. You know, there's no need to sort of keep going back to it or getting sucked into lots of, you know, long hours of play or anything. It's just kind of, oh yeah, I fancy a little, you know, 5 minutes off from whatever I'm doing.
Well, and so I was playing some of the games that have come out of the Rising Sun studio, and some of those are just like Jetpack Joyride, really very, very addictive kind of simple games. That also, you know, have some really stunning graphics. So how do you start with that when you're in your kind of game studio / college? How do you kind of manage that process of people coming in and saying, all right, I want to make a game, and then kind of how does that turn into something that I can actually play like I was doing yesterday?
It is quite a process, really. I mean, like you say, they do come in a lot of the time, obviously, because they're college level, they're 16 to 18. There's a real mixed bag of experience due to the educational system we have. Some come with a little bit of coding, some are really good at coding. Some are amazing artists, some are not so amazing. So it really is grounding them when they first come on the course of sort of working them together, trying to bring them all into line. And you do get the ones that come in that really, you know, they've become this amazing idea for this huge MMO, but their skills aren't there yet, and they won't be straight away. And, you know, of course they'll be able to do it eventually. So it's usually sort of reining them in a little bit, saying, look, do not forget that idea. Keep that idea. But let's just take a few steps back for a little bit. And the first place I always start is I get them straight away onto 2D, and we look at doing mobile because they know there's very clear restrictions and abilities that they can do on that sort of level of platforming. And obviously that'll transfer nicely over to doing iOS as well, which obviously I want to understand both sides of the marketplace. Do not just do one or the other. Try and do both. That's really, really important and understand the differences. And then creative-wise, you know, if you get a lot that come in with no idea, I just want to make a game, you know, where do I start? And it really does start with, I encourage the silly conversations. Let's just get together. Let's just have a lot of fun and just talk ideas as crazy, as silly as they may be. And that's where I think some of the best ideas. And to be honest with you, a lot of studios, one of my most favorite studios, Bozza Studios, I mean, that's how a lot of the time they do it. They have these lovely sessions. They all come in, the team gets together, and they talk ideas and, you know, and it's that natural development. Okay, this was right. Now it's not quite working. This idea, though, seems to be better. So it becomes a real team effort. And, yeah, I think silly conversations can sometimes be the most best way of starting, but coming up with a really great, new, interesting idea for a game.
Well, I will always encourage silly conversations, as that does make up 90 to 98% of most of the conversations I actually have. certainly, it makes up about 99.89% of this show.
The other is the theme tune.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And from what I understand so far, you've also been to what is, I believe, the biggest games conference in the world, E3, and some of your students have actually shown their work off there. Is that right?
Yeah, it's to be honest with you, it's the highlight of the course. It's trying to even more than just the understanding of building the game. As we know, I mean, today's day and age, you know, kind of being your own business person as well is really, really quite crucial. And, you know, the way we see, you know, I mean, obviously my background with education as well is knowing that nowadays, you know, you're not going to have one job for life. And if you do, that's going to be really rare. So, and you may even find yourself one day working freelance for whatever situation it is and with whichever specialism you may be working on. So I want to learn how to run a company. I want to know how to present themselves and learn the soft skills as well, how to work with people, so on and so forth. It was about 3 years ago. We used to go to E3 just as a trip and we used to visit. And that was fantastic. We were the only place I was aware of that run this trip for 16 to 18 year olds and you could take them into E3, and it was free for students to get in, which was amazing. And then they changed the policy that it was going to cost for students as well. And I didn't want to miss that opportunity. And I'd seen around E3 that there were these amazing companies, so much cool stuff happening. I was like, where's the UK? Where is all this amazing talent that we've got at college and university from the UK? I mean, there's no one here. And so obviously the change of the costing, I came up with a silly idea. I thought, well, why don't we just actually run a stall here ourselves? And so I went back and looked into it, spoke to the people at E3 and said, look, if we have a stall here, will you let my students in? And they said, well, as a one-off, we will let you guys have a, you know, we'll let all your students in for free as long as you run a stall. And that started the real kind of drive for me to, yes, get. I wanted the students to release their games commercially, but really get that into place. And ever since then, got a fantastic relationship with the guys at E3. That's absolutely brilliant. We look forward to going every year, and it's built amazing industry contacts for us and still remain the only UK college or university there exhibiting our titles.
So you turned a college into a game studio, and now you take your students to E3 every year. I think that's an amazing story.
So thank you.
My two co-hosts here, so I'm looking across at Catherine and Chris.
Menacingly.
You're not really a gamer, are you, Chris?
No.
And you're not really a gamer, are you, Catherine?
No, I occasionally crack out the classic Game Boy and, you know,
play Tetris.
Beat everyone I've ever met at Tetris. But other than that, no.
But no. So Chris, I mean, you're probably even less of a gamer than yeah. Catherine. So
I'm rubbish at Tetris, but...
But you have ideas. So...
Well...
and some of them are even good occasionally.
Allegedly.
Yes. So how then do you think someone like my co-host Chris could contribute to the process of creating a game?
Oh, many ways. I mean, you know, as I've already said about the silly conversations and kind of coming up with some idea for a game is a great place to start. Getting into a team and sharing those great ideas. But yeah, sometimes, I mean, I'm not a great, this is one of the things that quite makes my students laugh. I really don't play many games myself, to be honest with you. And much to the annoyance of my learners at times, where they're like, have you played this game? No, I haven't. I'm sorry. And that's quite a common conversation we do have. I think anything past Sega Mega Drive, I think pretty much my knowledge gets a little bit
Oh, but
bit
the
bad.
Mega Drive is a great console. I mean, I have every Sega console, and the Mega Drive is still my favourite far and away.
I love it. Love the Sega. Oh, absolutely brilliant. I mean, yeah, one of the best things you can do, I mean, just to get involved in the team, playing games and just reflecting upon what's making that game tick for you. Why do you, if you do play a few, what about that, those few or that one game, what really worked? What made you keep coming back to that game? Or even what put you off the game? That's just as important to understand, to contribute and find a team of people. You don't have to be necessarily the technically best person or even at all technically to be able to build a game. Get in with a team, share your ideas, and just have that passion about an idea. Like you say, it's film, it's books, it's everything. It all comes together in gaming.
And yeah, that's brilliant. And I think that's one of the themes that we've really seen amongst gamers and games journalists and people working in the games industry. It brings people together. It creates so much good feeling. And I think there's so much negativity around gaming. In the mainstream media, people talking about games being, you know, the root of all evil, essentially. And in games journalism, a lot of people bat-mouthing game studios all of these things around Gamergate and other things, you know, whatever side of the fence you're on in that, there are certainly lots of negativity. And I think really the message that we've heard tonight on the show is games are really positive. Games create so much love and understanding and are such a wonderful thing for the world and a great way for people to express themselves and to kind of take part and consume other people's creations, which is brilliant.
I think it's also, I mean, it does come to sort of like trying to, in a very non-contradictory way to educate people about what it's about. I mean, I get it all the time, being a teacher primarily as my job role, apart from just running the games company with the students. I've got parents all the time, my daughter wants to learn how to make games, you know, she's 15, but I'm really not sure about this gaming thing. And I'm trying to explain to them, and a lot of the time it's trying to explain to the parents, you do go on Facebook and you play games? Do you play Candy Crush or do you do this? And they go, yes. And it's like, well, then you're no different to your daughter who's wanting to learn to make computer games. And I'm constantly having that battle and slowly opening up the eyes of people to realize that there's nothing to fear in gaming at all whatsoever.
I suppose even our MPs get caught playing Candy Crush, so.
Oh, yes.
Cool. Well, and it's been really fascinating to talk to you, and I really appreciate you taking the time out. Since the cause that you are working for is so great, is there a plug that we can let you put out on air? Where can people try some of these games that your students have made out?
If you head over to the typical www dot and it's Rising Games with a Z on the Rising .co.uk, and on there is it gives you a link to our Twitter and our Facebook with everything that's going on, and the students run that for us, so they do all that side of the company. But there's also the games section as well, where you can be linked straight off to iOS, so you can go to the App Store, or if you want to do Android and go to Google Play, it will take you to the storefront. And most of the games are free as well, which is really good, because you just want to kind of just have that chance of porting those games out.
That's brilliant, and I'm sure our listeners will do that. We'll tweet out a link to that as well, so if anyone listening, or listening back to the show indeed, wants to download those games and give them a try, I encourage you to do so. I've played some of them. They're really, really fun. And so we have a live show at the end of the series on the 26th of February in London, and hopefully you and some of your students will make sure we give you the details. But if you are there and able to come along to that, then hopefully some of our listeners will be able to come and play those games and meet you all in person. But thank you so much for taking the time to come on the show today. Is there any kind of final message you have for anyone out there that is interested in developing video games?
Just do it. Write down those ideas. Have a pen and paper by the side of the bed. And when you're just about to fall asleep, that's the most creative time, and that's when you're going to get the best ideas. And just jot them down and look over them in the morning and play as many games as possible. Reflect on it.
Thank you very much. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. Thanks for being on the show, and have a fantastic evening, and best of luck with E3 this year. But at least we played the Lillian song.
Yeah, it did that thing that it does.
It was in a, and as Scattermoon, I think, said in the chat room, it was indeed in a Christmas ad last year, I believe it was. Was it the John Lewis one?
Yeah. Well, Scattermoon said bears dancing their way to John Lewis or something. Yeah, that sounds about right.
It was about hibernation. I wasn't the world's biggest fan. But then as we mentioned last week, canitalkaboutchristmasyet.com tells us that we can't.
Indeed.
So we shan't. But time is ticking away. But anyway, it's time for me to turn the fader up on that computer.
Yeah, that would help.
It's time for... I do this every week. It's terrible. I really ought to learn how to use our equipment.
You know those party games that everyone thinks are still fun when you're sober, but really aren't? It's time for Would You Rather.
Indeed it is. And this week we've got... Is it another one you made up, Catherine?
No, this one was... Well, no,
it was a bit of a mix, wasn't it?
A bit of a mix. It was kind of me and Catherine made it up.
You both kind of came up. I had no involvement in this.
Yeah, this is really a Catherine Kez creation.
With K's everywhere. Yeah. Anyway.
Gaming themed?
It is gaming
themed. So it is gaming themed. And the question is... Would you rather only be able to listen to the Tetris theme tune for like the rest of your life? That's all you could hear.
No other songs.
Or have the Tetris line clear sound play every time you cough. Which is that noise there.
Yeah. That's the, when you get a Tetris, not just one line.
That's a four-line
thing. Four line, yeah.
Is that actually called a Tetris?
It's called a Tetris, yeah.
Is that what? Did they name the game after the Tetris or name the Tetris after the game?
I don't know.
What came first, the Tetris or the egg?
Mm-hmm. Indeed.
Sorry, I needed a cough.
I wish I could have used that earlier. We need your votes to decide whether you, the listeners, would rather only ever be able to listen to the Tetris theme tune or... have that noise. Do you want to hit the button again?
Oh, that noise.
Play every time you cough. Got a bit
of a
coughing fit.
Might be less annoying for
on.
My neighbours if I have a coughing fit in the night.
Might be less annoying for our listeners.
So, yeah, do cast your votes. gkly.co/WYR.
Yes, so gkly.co/WYR.
Yes, for would you rather. Let us know which one you would rather. Currently the votes are on level pegging.
Oh, really?
They are entirely 50-50. So
that noise is actually quite annoying.
It is kind of.
I love that noise. That is the noise of Tetris success.
That noise will be your epitaph. just every time someone walks past. Motion sensor.
Yeah, I'm having it on my gravestone.
Yeah. Yep. Here terrifying. Lies Catherine. She was a Tetris.
I'm gonna be buried in a tetromino shaped.
But
I think most people are though. You know, one of those long skinny.
Yeah. When I die, I'm going to have my body cut into Tetris-shaped pieces, and then people can then put me together in weird shapes at my funeral.
That's a bit disgusting.
Sounds squelchy.
Yes. Well, I did randomly when I was online last night. I opened my laptop to do some research for Geekly and found myself looking at the process of putrefaction after someone dies.
Uh-huh. Of course. Because that's relevant to the show.
Yeah. And well, what was really interesting was that I found that there were all of these chemicals that already had names that were then given new names that sounded a bit cutesier by a German scientist about 100 years ago. So like something that was like a certified bean ended up being called putrescine because it smelled like putrid flesh. And I just think really interesting, this idea of naming chemicals after random other things.
Right then.
Yes, moving on.
You want a button?
Yeah, I want a button that does that.
Really?
Well, you have this button, but it doesn't do anything.
Yeah, we have actually given Catherine a button. It's not plugged in.
It's
yet.
A real button.
Next time.
But it doesn't do anything.
Yeah, next time. That'll be what Catherine's button does. That will be all that Catherine's button does is go. And that would be pretty amazing.
Fantastic.
So would
right,
you?
We
but,
must stop coughing.
But what about the Tetris theme tune though? Because I quite like it.
Yeah, I suppose I like it. But you know, once it's been in your head for about 4 days, you can start to feel like you're losing your grip on reality.
Not really.
Oh, I do. I start, you know, doing a dance.
I know, we've been asked the question: A theme or B theme? I must know.
Oh, A theme.
A theme, right? What was the B theme? Means. I can't remember what the B theme was. Was the B theme that went the one that went da 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 da? Was that the B theme?
I'm really not sure.
Okay,
I'm not the person to ask.
Is this another one of those times where you just start singing on the show?
Am I doing the intro round? It's the intro round again.
Oh god.
I think we might need to play the Tetris song a little bit.
I think we might, but we'll do that during the next. Yeah, we'll do that during the next song. I think we should probably actually think about what we're going to play next as well.
That's very true.
Thinking back to our Now days, we were looking at different songs from the Now album, and we were. We were thinking about songs that we remembered, and we had two here. Which one should we play of the two that we haven't played yet?
Now for the Dripping Forecast, issued by the Geekly Chronicles on behalf of Ross Geller at 1900. The general summary this evening. Dalek Sewers, 8. Possible extermination later. Tap, 4. 6 after sunset. Grandad's Nose, 9. Possible infections later. Showerhead, 3. Massage setting, 7. 8. 9. Rain, 7. Occasional singing. Spilled milk, 7. 8 with tears. Candle wax, 6. Moderate in drafty Gothic mansions. Gutters, 5. With birds' nests, leaves, and moss. The blood of your enemies, 3. With Batleth, 12. Beef dripping, tasty. Heartburn later. Toilet overflow pipe, 3. Icicles in winter. Sweat, 7. Rashes later. And thus concludes the Dripping Forecast.
Welcome, ooh. Game of Geeks again, episode 3. So far, Kez and Chris are on one win apiece. So who's going to take the lead after today's quiz?
So as a reminder, Game of Geeks, for anyone that's listening for the first time, is a little quiz that we do. Catherine gives us a whole bunch of clues, and Chris and I between us have to guess and see whether we can actually
whether we
get
know
a film.
Anything.
Whether we know anything, yes.
Yes.
Yeah. So these are clues to films, movies.
What were the standings? I wasn't listening.
You've won one game apiece. So level pegging at the moment. Yeah. Yep.
Chris won, Kez won.
Indeed.
Yes.
So So yeah, it's all still to play for. Obviously, it is entirely possible that we might end up with a draw at the end of the series, in which case we will have to do some kind of lightning
death
round.
Match round.
Yes,
I mean lightning round.
Yes.
So it's clues about movies, and these are movies taken from the IMDb top 250.
And so tonight's buzzer wise,
Kez goes. Oh, and Chris goes.
I go nothing, apparently, because you haven't turned my fader up.
Go on.
Which I feel is a competitive disadvantage to me. And was deliberate.
Shenanigans.
Yes.
Sorry.
Shenanigans.
Sorry.
Anyway.
And Chris goes. There we go.
Continuing our gaming theme.
Yes. What are the noises?
Indeed. Well,
I'm
you
looking
tell
at
me.
You.
You're the gamer.
True. Okay. Well,
I don't know. My noise.
Pressing the wrong button. My noise. It's when Sonic loses all of his rings, because I am, of course, a Sega fan at heart. Mm-hmm. Never mind that Nintendo shenanigans. And Chris, your noise is when Mario dies.
Yeah.
Because Lovely. Mario is dead to me. Anyway.
Apparently so.
Sorry, Sonic Forever.
Fix your plumbing.
Super fast blue hedgehog. Actually, I'm pretty sure that
we've got a jingle for that.
Debating the important things in life. Like whether or not a super fast blue hedgehog is better than an overweight plumber with a moustache.
There we go.
Well,
so anyway,
that is a correct answer.
Game of Geeks.
Yes. So I've written three clues for each film, and if you get it on the first clue, you get 3 points. Second clue, 2 points. Third clue, only 1 point.
All right. Okay.
So there's lots of points up for grabs. So yeah, let's get going.
All right then.
So ready for your first clue for the first film?
Yes.
Yeah.
Fingers on buzzers.
Yep.
Okay. Right. Okay, so of our first film, the title is derived from an American children's folk rhyme, which can be read in its entirety in the novel the movie is based on.
That's a confusing clue.
Yeah, and yeah. I have no idea what you're talking about.
So
what
a book.
Are you talking about,
it's
Willis?
So there's a book that has some kind of children's rhyme in it somewhere, and they made a movie based on it and took the title of the movie from the rhyme.
Yes. Stitch in Time Saves Nine.
Is that a film?
I have no idea. I'm just thinking of things I learned as a child.
If it is, then it's not the right one.
Children's rhymes that were made into films.
You know, what? I think we probably need the next clue.
Yeah. Let's
I don't think
on.
That clue has any hope of
All right.
variety.
Next clue.
Okay, this movie is set in an Oregon psychiatric hospital. I can hear the cogs in your brains whirring.
Yes, but not very fast.
No.
I have no idea.
Or in the right direction.
Next clue.
Next clue. The entire film was shot in sequence, apart from one scene where the patients go fishing.
I have no idea.
No.
Literally no. no idea.
This might be easier had you seen a film set in a psychiatric hospital.
Oh, well, I have seen a few, but not this one.
Where at some point patients go fishing. Can you think of any films that might be set in psychiatric hospitals so you could have a guess?
Good Will Hunting?
Nope. But good on you for guessing. Okay, so it was One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Oh!
For those of you playing along at home.
There we go.
Okay.
Okay. Somebody in the chat room said, is it the Pokemon movie?
Oh, close.
Well, close. Closer than my guess. Okay, next clue. Next one.
Okay,
on.
Next one. So clue number one for 3 points. This movie's lead actor's younger brother doubled for him in many of his numerous running scenes.
Who runs a lot as an actor?
David Tennant.
Not really in a movie, though. More in Doctor Who.
Runs in a movie. I've seen movies where David Tennant ran.
Like?
What We Did Last Summer.
Was David Tennant in that?
Yeah.
Okay. but no.
Okay. All right, then.
Okay, on to clue number two. This movie's titular character has, according to a doctor in the film, a back as crooked as a politician.
Oh, that was a misfire. I have no idea.
You've got to say something.
Premature Mario death.
It's a common problem.
We're really not doing
so
well.
So we've
this
got
week.
A character with a crooked back who runs a lot.
Something about the Hunchback of Notre Dame.
Guess.
Forrest Gump.
Yes.
Ah, yes, yes.
On the second
yes,
clue, so that's 2 points for Kez.
Ah, oh, see, we when you put those things together,
mark,
suddenly.
Yeah, I know, right?
Yeah, there we go.
So you've got to take the clues together.
Yeah.
Yeah, not in isolation.
Oh, wow.
Okay, right. Ready for film number three?
Yes.
Okay, no. Clue number one. If you can get it on this one, that's worth 3 points.
I can still win this.
So this film, along with Slumdog Millionaire, is one of two Best Picture Oscar winners to show a child jumping into the waste pond under a toilet.
That sounds a bit disgusting.
Wow.
Yep.
Nope.
No.
No.
Okay. Clue number two for worth 2 points. This film is the most expensive black and white film movie made to date.
No.
Guess.
Sin City.
No.
Okay.
In a word.
Okay. Suppose that was black, white, and red all over.
Yeah, yeah. There was little splashes of colour in that one.
Right.
Yep. Okay. Ready for clue number three?
Yep.
As ready as we'll ever be.
Clue number three. Steven Spielberg refused to accept a salary to direct this film as he would have considered it blood money.
Hmm. Interesting.
No idea.
I feel
it's
like
black
I know
and
this.
It's Spielberg.
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 I feel no like I know idea. This one.
Absolutely
but
no
just
idea.
It's not happening in my
no,
brain.
No idea at all.
Do you want me to tell you?
Yes, yeah. Please.
It's Schindler's List.
Oh, but I didn't realise that was... My memory of Schindler's List is of it being in colour.
That's
that's bizarre, that's isn't it? Because I remember Schindler's List in colour. That's bizarre. I would have said I was thinking Schindler's List, but I thought, well, it's not black and white.
Well.
And nothing like Sin City.
No. Really. Yeah, perfect polar opposite. Okay.
No.
So one more?
One more.
Go on.
Okay, go on. Okay, clue number one for 3 points. Make sure those fingers are well oiled on those buzzers.
Yep.
My finger is a bit too well oiled on my buzzer, as we found out.
Oh dear, that crumpet grease.
Yes.
Right. So this film was the first comic book movie to win an Oscar for achievement in acting.
Spider-Man.
Cares. No.
Ooh.
Spider-Man 2.
No. Yes.
Spider-Man 3.
No, okay. I'm going to force that we move on to the next clue. Worth 2 points. Obviously, second clue.
Schindler's List.
Which buzz did in. Actually have red in it. So there we go.
Okay, right. Remember to buzz in, people.
Okay.
This sequel made more money in its first 6 days at the box office than its predecessor did in its entire run.
Yes. Iron Man 2.
No.
Humph.
Whatever Chris. The second Batman film was called.
Oh.
The Dark Knight Rises or something like that.
No, oh, was it?
Batman 2, something like that.
Arkham Asylum, or was
no,
that a game?
No, that was a game. You're so close.
You know, the one with the second...
Just take a word off.
The Dark Knight. Yes.
That wasn't... Oh.
Woo.
That wasn't...
Competition sucks.
Competition sucks when you're sat across from the person with all the buttons and the faders.
I was not doing anything untoward.
As far as the listeners know.
What's the total for this week, Catherine?
The total for this week is...
Oh.
This week's winner is... Kez.
With 4 points. And Chris was yet to... score.
I'm going to shake my fist angrily across the table.
Really?
Oh, that was very unfortunate.
It was a tad. So we've got a song coming up now. Please don't forget to vote in Would You Rather.
Yes,
gkoy.co/WYR.
It's very even at the moment.
Yeah, we need you people to vote.
In fact,
otherwise
it's 50-50 at the moment.
Really,
so
is a
yeah.
Tie. Okay, that was
and
just
that
enough
was
of that.
Enough of that.
Yes. And that was a request from Ben Ross in the chat room, but yes, no more. No more. And that was deserving of a...
I am going home and getting my Game Boy out.
Well, indeed, so that was the Tetris theme, and...
I'm also going to play some Tetris.
Yes, yeah, and so we will do the results of Would You Rather very shortly, but first.
More random happenings from across the internet. It's the Tumble Fumble.
Hey. Okay.
Just give yourself a
little wee. Yeah, why not, hey? So, you know, it's approaching that time of year when people do more shopping. Not allowed to talk about why, but it is. And you might well be looking at more online reviews. So I was thinking, well, I've spotted a few amusing or silly or even poorly informed online reviews, shall we say. So
the best kind.
So I encountered a Tumblr that collects reviews of books where people just haven't really got the point.
Brilliant.
And onestarbookreview.tumblr.com is where you want to go. That's onestarbookreview, all one word, .tumblr.com.
Loading it up now.
And it's classic books, you know, books that you might have had to read for school, you know, really, I suppose, you know, stuff that's considered rather excellent in general. But this is the thoughts of people that have not enjoyed them. So, yeah. it seems we've encountered a good one.
I sure wouldn't call it a novel. It's quite a good one.
What book was that for?
That was for Bury My Heart at Wounded Knee, an Indian History of the American West. Like, yes, well, it's not a novel, so well done. The other one is a review on Sun Tzu's The Art of War, which is a book that I've read, and I think it's just one of those little things to kind of keep around, because it's quite an interesting book full of interesting little tidbits. But the review is, every idea is so damn obvious that after 20 pages or so, I thought I was Sun Tzu himself. Okay. It is the most influential book of strategy in the world, and that's what you're saying.
My favourite one of these is probably just the review of Gravity's Rainbow that says, this is why people hate literature.
Goodness me. So I found Neil Gaiman, The Graveyard Book. I liked it about as much as I like snakes, and trust me, I hate snakes.
This one's interesting. In the Night Kitchen by Maurice Sendak, and a review is, young children do not need to be exposed to Mickey's genitalia.
Okay, a review here of The Exorcist. This book gave me nightmares. Nightmares, but every book I read will be as boring as this one. Burn. Oh, yeah. There are many, many one-star book reviews.
There's a Shakespeare review that just says, I think that Shakespeare made up some of the words.
That's on Much Ado About Nothing.
Yes, it is.
Yes.
Oh, brilliant.
This book is not very good because it is in the olden days.
Roald Dahl, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. Willy Wonka is a psychotic, sadistic, child-hating man-child with a penchant for third world labour.
Well,
you know.
When you break it down.
Not entirely.
There's a point.
See where they're coming from, but...
There's a great review here on Of Mice and Men, classic book by John Steinbeck. If I want to be depressed, I'll just think, not read. Wow.
It's not really a review. It's more of a fact on Brave New World by Aldous Huxley that says, removed from classrooms in Miller and then a US state, but I don't know the abbreviations, but it's MO. So if you can figure that one out, because I'm really bad at those. In 1980, for making promiscuous sex look like fun. That was removed from classrooms for that reason.
Well, there's a review here of Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets that just says, it was so scary and spooky, I'm afraid of Moaning Myrtle.
A Stuart Little review that says, this book contains a series of unconnected events in the life of a mouse man.
Well, yes,
it does. You are correct.
Oh, this is brilliant.
The right regular Sherlock there. Okay, so you know, that's books. There's also a Twitter account that I've been following for quite a while, which looks at Amazon movie reviews. For people that perhaps just haven't quite got it.
Brilliant.
So it's at AMZN movie REVWS. So if you need me to say that again, it was twitter.com/AMZN movie REVWS.
So that's just basically Amazon movie reviews with lots of letters removed.
Yeah.
All the vowels Amazon. Taken out. A lot like Welsh.
Yeah.
I like the fact
vowels
that
taken out of Amazon.
The Wolf
reviews.
Of Wall Street here got one star because, says Joe Watson, there were no wolves in the movie.
Wow.
Frozen got 5 stars because apparently Olaf.
My favourite one is this review of American Sniper where someone has rated it 1 star. And it says in the text of the review, I enjoyed this picture very much and it deserves 5 stars.
A 5-star review of Jurassic World that just says dinosaurs.
Yeah, 5-star review of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles that just says, I like turtles.
Black Swan gets a review, 2 stars, in the movie, not anywhere was there swans.
I'm sensing a theme here.
Yes.
It's really, really good.
Finding Nemo, 5-star review titled Find the Smell. Someone has put, my dad has a fish tank. I pee in it sometimes just to mess with him.
Oh my God.
I'm sure it's not just their dad they're messing with either.
No. I can't imagine the fish are best pleased.
This person has reviewed The Man from U.N.C.L.E., but not reviewed the film, reviewed the meal they were having with the film. So apparently we've got here, I ordered fries and a cheeseburger from the cinema eatery, and when it finally arrived, it was fish and chips.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
A 1-star review of The Godfather, just saying, I was at Target and saw that I could have bought it cheaper there.
There's a 5-star review here of Blues Brothers 2000 by someone who hasn't seen Blues Brothers 2000. It just says, I might see it. Oh, wow.
The review of The Social Network, 1 star. How many times can you take the Lord's name in vain and act so casual about it? He's Mark Zuckerberg. He's the CEO.
Okay.
I see. So as we crash right through the 2-hour time slot we give ourselves, shall we have a look at the
let's do
the
that.
Would you rather results?
What is the view on this week's would you rather?
By a tiny, tiny amount, but an amount nonetheless. Have the Tetris line clear sound play every time you cough. Sorry. Yeah, there you go. Is this week's would you rather winner?
Every time now you say anything.
I don't blame people, really. I mean, I would miss listening to songs other than...
Yes, me too. Yeah, that would be sad.
I'd have to agree with the audience vote this week.
You got it right, audience. Well done.
Well done.
So on a week where we have had 2 fantastic interviews with people from within the sphere of gaming, we have had some fantastic songs. We've talked about Now That's What I Call Music in all of its various guises. We had some annoying noises. Some even more annoying noises. And some even more annoying noises.
Yep.
This has been The Geekly Chronicles. And from me, Kez.
From me, Chris.
And me, Catherine.
We bid you...
Adieu.
Goodbye.
Good night. Have a good weekend.
Yes. And a good,
various other things like that. Things.
See you next time.
Bye.
You've been listening to The Geekly Chronicles. Content was researched and vaguely fudged together by Chris, Catherine and Kez, who are also your hosts for this evening's show. The Geekly Chronicles is an independent production. Any reference to any persons or things, living or dead, was probably an error. What is reality anyway? Don't take the blue pill. Live long and prosper. Wear sunscreen.